The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
James Morrison was ordained as a Buddhist monk in the Thai forest tradition and lived with meditation masters in Thailand for 15 years. For the last 12 years, he has also practiced at his property in the Santa Cruz Mountains, the Redwood Hermitage. James has now retired from his life as a monk, but is continuing to teach the Dhamma he has inherited from his teachers. Currently, he is staying at his peaceful hermitage, surrounded by redwood trees. Others are welcome to join him, spending time on individual retreat, experiencing the tranquility, beauty, and simplicity of nature. Welcome, James.
Good. All right.
Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa.
So this morning I'm coming on the way to give a talk on overcoming worry. And as I say, a funny thing happened to me on the way to the meditation center. So the vehicle I'm driving in suddenly has a rear tire blowout and made it here just in time. So another good Dhamma lesson in being able to be prepared for overcoming worry about anything that might go wrong in the future. And fortunately, Nancy responded with calm, collected, and she saved the day by getting me here in time. Okay. So today I want to talk a bit about worry as a mental state and how it, what it is, how it affects our life, and more specifically, what are some strategies that we can use to overcome that. I lived in New Zealand for a long time, and the classic saying there is, hey, no worries, mate. You know, it's their way of saying, everything's fine, you know, it's no problem, no worries, mate. But it's a lot easier to say than actually have a mind that's free of worry. And just understanding what worry is and why it's such a stubborn, unhelpful mental state. Yeah. It's basically fear. Basically fear that something is going to go wrong in the future. Now, the thing about worry is that even if everything's perfect right now, everything could be perfect right now, like every need and desire met, still we can ruin it by worrying about the future, worrying about now everything's great, I might lose it. Then we start to worry. And so if worrying becomes a habit, then we'll never really be able to enjoy our life, even if everything is wonderful, because worrying doesn't allow us to be joyfully present. We'll be thinking about the future and all the things that possibly could go wrong. And one of the things about worry is that because it is concerned with the future, and the future is unknown, it's basically infinite. You could worry about anything, and it's really only limited by the scope of our imagination. So if you have a good imagination and a tendency towards worry, it's just, you can imagine kind of any scenario and think, yeah. You know, whether it's realistic or completely unrealistic, you could think, yeah, that could happen. What about that? What if that happens? So that's a terrible way to live, right? And it really does make it very difficult just to enjoy life, even when everything is actually pretty good. Now, as we know, there are realistic dangers or things that could go wrong in life. Absolutely. And are we sometimes going to have things happen in the future that we don't want or that are unpleasant? Absolutely. But there's no reason why we can't live in peace and relative contentment in the present, knowing that will happen in the future. A wise monk once said, if there's a problem and there's a solution, then you just apply the solution and no need to worry. And if there's a problem and there's no solution, then why worry? So you realize, yeah, why is it that with all of the drawbacks of worrying, you know, it's exhausting, it can be mentally exhausting, it can be physically exhausting, it really doesn't allow us to be present, certainly doesn't allow us to fully enjoy what we have, then why is it that it's so difficult to let go of? It's because, like, unlike many other mental states or negative mental states, worry is often conflated with wholesome qualities, such as care, love, or maybe even just being a responsible person. As if we're not worrying about something, if we're not worrying about a person, if we're not worrying about our children or our parents or partner, then it's as if we don't care. It's like it's almost saying you're a bad parent if you're not worrying about your child. Or if you're not worried about your future, people think something wrong with you. You're not being responsible, you know. Learn how to grow up and be dour and worrying about the future like everybody else. So to be able to separate the wholesome qualities from the unwholesome qualities, you know, is not always easy, but it's essential. You'd say, yes, we want to be loving and caring. How do we do that without falling into the darker side of worrying? Yeah? Worrying as an expression, we think somehow is an expression of love. Actually, no, we'll be able to love and care much more fully if we're not worrying. Right? So being able to begin to see how these are not the same thing and separate them out. And the same thing with taking responsibility. There are so many ways that obviously we do need to take responsibility for many things in our life. Things that are maybe conducive to worry. Financial worries, health worries, they go together. You know, healthcare, finances, just all manner of things that we may need to look into and take care of in our life. But applying the solution or taking responsibility for something doesn't mean that we have to worry about it. Especially if worrying just becomes a habit, then maybe the same repeating thought can just be cycling around over and over again and it becomes very counterproductive. So then how do you actually stop worrying? It's not like we can just say, you know, worrying is counterproductive, I'm just going to stop. Because if it's an entrenched habit, and if we're not fully aware of what's going on, it has a lot of momentum, and it will just keep going and going and going. So it's not just a matter of, yeah, I'm going to stop worrying, but then before we know it, you know, it starts cycling through our mind again. So I can give you some good strategies to work with it, and then that will be a start to put it into practice. And then you can apply these, I call them four very helpful strategies, to any situation where we might be worrying. Well, whether it's worrying about a loved one, worrying about situation at work, worrying about the future of our finances, worried. You know, there's just endless amounts of things that we possibly could worry about. So any subject, you can apply these four basic principles. So the first we should be fairly familiar with is clear awareness, right? You just have to start by knowing when worry is present. It's so insidious. If it becomes like our default position of our minds, that there's an underlying anxiety about the future, underlying feeling of insecurity, you know, like something's not right, things could fall apart at any second, which is kind of realistic too, but the fear is the problem, right? If that becomes a basic underlying default position of our minds, then we need to see that clearly, right? And not just accept that as reality or as what's normal. So clearly seeing worry when it's present, right? Just watching and noticing as soon as it arises. Now, in order to understand worry, you don't have to bring it up. If you're looking at your mind and you're free of worry, fantastic. Enjoy that. And really pay attention, like close attention, to a mind that is free of worry, because it's intrinsically pleasant. It feels peaceful. It feels content, even if it's just for a few seconds, right? Just clearly notice the mind that's free of worry, because our minds will naturally incline towards that which is pleasant, if we just give it the right information. Now, if we're not paying attention to our mind when it's free of worry, we're only paying attention to the thoughts that are conducive to worry, are giving fuel to it, then those thoughts, worry-fueling thoughts, become our entire reality. So if we pay attention to also to when our mind is calm or quiet, or at least free of worry, then what we pay attention to will become stronger and our minds will incline towards that because it's intrinsically pleasant, it's peaceful. So you don't have to bring up worry. There's plenty of times that worry will arise by itself. You don't have to bring it up in order to understand it. But when it does arise, notice its presence, but then also notice what preceded that, if you can, without getting caught up in the story within the thoughts. Just notice what preceded that. And then notice its presence. And then notice, if you're just watching it, eventually it will stop. So notice the cessation. And then when it ceases, pay close attention to that mind which is free, at least temporarily not worrying. So the second of these four strategies is developing a wisdom in action, a reflection, trying to understand the nature of what worry is, the nature of fear, how it arises, how it affects our life, and essentially the subjects about which we might be worrying about. If we truly understand the nature of things, we're not going to worry. It's only because we have unrealistic expectations, because we identify with certain things, if we don't understand the true nature of something, then, of course, it leads to a certain delusion around it, and that is conducive to all sorts of unwholesome mental states, but particularly worry. So if you understand things, if you understood reality very clearly, you would not worry. And it's not a question of everything going right in your life to be free of worry. Right? After the Buddha was enlightened, he had so many difficult things happen in his life. Managing the Sangha, his cousin tried to kill him numerous times. Things that probably most of us don't even have to deal with. And yet, as far as we know, the Buddha never worried about it. He never worried. His mind would not go to worry. So it's not a question of getting everything externally perfect. It's not like, you know, if you're sitting on a beach at an exotic resort, surrounded by the perfect family, the drink in your hand, you think, oh, that's definition of freedom of worry, but freedom from worry. But the reality is, unfortunately, a lot of people at places like that are worrying about their business. They're worrying about their family. They're just unable to fully enjoy, even when everything is externally perfect. It's really a matter of internal work. So understanding the nature of whatever it is that we're worrying about, right? You can use kind of active reflection. If it's a personal relationship, for example, we're worried about another person or a relationship with another person. Understanding that, yes, every relationship is temporary, subject to cessation, constantly changing. It's going to end someday. Most things in life are out of our control, right? If we can be at peace with those things, then that alleviates a lot of sources of worry, understanding things correctly. I mean, that's a big subject in and of itself. Or how we identify with people. We can identify with other people's bodies and minds as if somehow they belong to us, right? Even just the phrasing that we use, you know, my partner, my children, my parents, my dog, whatever, right? If we identify with something, then there's a certain amount of possessiveness, wish to control it, or almost like we think we have the right to control it if it's ours. And so challenging that, that's unrealistic. I mean, other people and things don't actually belong to us in the big picture. And even this body and this mind is mainly out of our control, to say nothing of other people's bodies and minds. So using wisdom to be able to reflect and understand the nature of people and relationships and how we relate and essentially how we perceive others, you know, the reality we create through perceptions that are projected out. If we understand that more clearly, then we realize it's really nothing to worry about, right? Things may happen in the future that are unpleasant. So what, right? Things have happened our whole life sometimes that are unpleasant. Have we made it through? Have we survived? Is it sometimes difficult? Sure, but we make it through. The future will probably be the same. This is how you take the energy or the strength of any kind of fear and just look at the fear and challenge it and say, if that actually happens, would I still be able to survive, continue, grow? Sometimes even it's the most difficult situations where we grow the most. Right? And if we can be at peace with the subject of what we're worrying about, the scenario, realistic or unrealistic, then it takes all of the energy away from that fear. It's like it doesn't have the power to control us anymore. But it's difficult to develop wisdom if our minds are very scattered and agitated. So leads to the third recommended strategy, which is meditative calm. It's so helpful to be able to develop the skill, right? Even if you're sitting meditation today and it feels like most of the time you weren't mindful or most of the time you were thinking, still, even if you have a short amount of time during meditation or throughout the day where you feel mindful, present, centered, grounded, even if you can just take a few deep breaths before your mind starts to spin out again, that's good. That's a start. It's a skill that we all have the ability to develop. And generally, wisdom will go as deep as our level of meditative calm. And it's also a way just to overcome worry at any given moment, because a mind of worry cannot simultaneously coexist with a mind of calm contentment. So if you just take a few deep breaths, feel a moment of contentment and calm, then at least that breaks the cycle. It starts to break the habit. And then, of course, you know, the more we do that, the better. Now, the fourth strategy is look at our lifestyle. Sometimes there are things we can actually do to live a lifestyle which is going to be less conducive to worry, right? If we're regularly doing things that are, for example, illegal, we might worry more. Or if there's certain ways that we relate to other people that is conducive to worry, you might think maybe it's not only changing our attitude towards worry, but also maybe we could make some lifestyle changes. Is there a different way of relating to people or a situation, taking responsibility for things, which would then allow, create a life which is less conducive to worry? And there usually is, you know, certain changes that we could make. And even if the changes that we make don't seem to make a difference, just knowing that we've made an effort and we've really tried our best, that in and of itself makes it easier to accept whatever happens in the future. And once we have that acceptance, then we just don't tend to worry anymore. So these are four things that can be applied to pretty much any situation. Whatever you might be worried or feeling insecure about, or whatever fears might arise. It may take a while. It's not like you can just, you know, say, oh, now I've got the answer. And suddenly your mind is calm and free of worry. But they have to be applied again and again and again. And one of the things that helped me a lot overcome worry. I find I don't worry that much. And there's a lot I could worry about. there's a lot in my life I could worry about if I was prone to worry. But one of the things that I had done previously when I was a monk, I would do what's called tudong. Which comes from the Pali word tudanga, which means an ascetic practice. And real tudong means you, basically, I would just go out. Typically, I would take, say, a month and go to a distant location and give myself a month to get back to the monastery somehow. But I would have no money. We're not allowed to have money. We're not allowed to store food, so I didn't have any food. didn't know where, I didn't have any fixed plans. That's very important. No fixed plans. It's not like I had a bunch of places lined up where I was going to go, because that gives the illusion of security. When you have fixed plans in your head, gives you a delusion that you think you know what's going to happen in the future. But if you just determine no plans, so no money, no food, don't know where I'm going to stay, no vehicle, of course. Now, if my mind was conducive to worry, that going on Tudong would not be any fun at all. It would just be like, oh my, where am I going to sleep? Am I going to have food tomorrow? How am I going to get back? How am I going to get anywhere? Right? So if I was prone to worry, I realized pretty quickly this was not going to be any fun. So I had just to learn how to trust. Trust that if my intentions were good, then I would trust in the results that came from that. That's basic law of karma. You can phrase it in different ways. You say if you do the right thing, the universe will look after you. Or if you look after the Dhamma will look after you. But I realized that almost everything was out of my control in that situation. But one thing I did have at least an illusion of control over was my intentions. I could keep generating wholesome intentions. What is my purpose? Why am I here? What am I doing this for? Clarifying that, purifying that. And then whatever results came from that, just learn how to accept it. Some would be pleasant, some would be unpleasant. But what I found was that I never went hungry. I had some strange combinations of meals sometimes, but I never went hungry. Always had a place to stay somewhere, even if it was outside. Yeah, most of the time it was outside somewhere, and I always got back to the monastery. I always survived, and I had the greatest experiences that no amount of trip planning, prior to going, could have imagined. So if I had tried to control everything by planning everything out, it would have been much less enjoyable. It was not doing that. I had the most amazing synchronicities happening because every day I would just wake up and say, okay, which direction do I go today? I'm going to wait for a sign or something to happen, and sometimes it would just be meeting someone and say, oh, well, I live over here. You can come this way if you want. You can come with me, or you can stay at my place, or I'll give you a ride here, and then, okay. And just wait for a sign to see which way I'm going to be going that day. And then, what I found is that when I wasn't trying to control the future, and I wasn't worrying about it, I was just very, very open to whatever would happen, that life was the best. It was better than, it was so much better than normal. And of course, once I got back to the monastery, I have many responsibilities and schedules, and you have to have a schedule. So I couldn't live like that always. But this lesson of how to trust, that seemed to carry on. Just really trusting that if my intentions are good, I'll trust in the results. Right? And that carried on. And so I would try to do that. For many years, I did that practice every year. Yeah, so give it a try sometime. But the basic idea that comes from it is that it is possible to overcome worry and really trust. Put your trust into something larger, and then good things come from that, and then things work out. Okay. So I offer this for your reflection this morning. And then if anyone has any questions, feel free to ask if anything you're curious about. Yes.
Thank you for your talk. Do you have any books that you've written or that you would maybe even recommend regarding what you've been talking about this morning?
Not specifically on this subject. I have written some books and articles, but mostly on samatha and vipassana. But not specifically on overcoming worry or fear.
Thank you very much. I don't believe in worry. I've practiced non-worry for many, many years. And one of the things you said about intentions, I think I have confidence in my intentions, and that really helps me to not worry. And your month-long trip, the question I had was, if someone offered you a ride in a vehicle, were you allowed to take it? And I think you said yes.
Oh, yeah. I could accept. Yeah.
Okay.
I didn't have to walk the whole way.
So
that might take longer than a month.
Okay, good. Yeah, well, when I was married and in my 20s, my husband and I just took off to Europe and hitchhiked through Europe. And we didn't know where we were going exactly. We just went from day to day and place to place. And it was really lovely. I don't know if I could do it today, but it was lovely. And so, yeah, I agree with you. Worrying is useless. Not that I don't do it.
it's counterproductive.
Hello. It was really relevant to me. Thank you so much for the talk. But I think in general, women, us, tend to worry more than men. That's what I think. Especially, I think it's in our nature as a mother to make sure that the safety or things are taken care of, right? Mm. So my question is, how do you get that balance? It's really tough to be prepared for certain, because it's like we can't always say, okay, if my intentions are okay, the universe is going to take care of me. It might happen, but it might not. So how do you strike that balance between being prepared and not worrying? Mm-hmm. I think being prepared in some way is also a little bit, because you're worried and you're being prepared, right?
Right. Well, first of all, I'll say, I know my mother used to say, yeah, I'd be off traveling around Asia or something, and she was like, oh, I'm really worried. And I said, don't worry. She said, I'm a mother. I have to worry. Which is not true, but I can't really stop her from worrying, because that's tied up with caring and love, right? So this is, how do you separate the destructive aspect of fear and worry, which is unhelpful, from care and love, and being responsible and preparing, right? Of course, we need to make plans and contingencies to do our best, you know, to be responsible so that things work out in the future, right? Yes, definitely. But if we're always, let's say, it's a big difference between being responsible and then constantly worrying about the future and what could go wrong. It's like our minds get in a habit of seeing the negative all the time, the potential problems, and then that becomes sort of just how we see the world. It just feels like there's always a big problem right around the corner. There's always things that could go wrong. At any moment, there's things that could go wrong because we're always, our mind's going to worry all the time as a habit or fear. And then that becomes, so many people just base their lives and actions and sometimes their whole life is based on fear. Fear of what other people think, fear of not pleasing our parents, it's just so many types of fear that may control our life. How do we start to separate that out? So clearly, I don't know what it's like to be a mother, but you can develop the nurturing, caring, loving side of things without the worry. Is that possible? Give it a try.
Thank you. Thank you. So I'm a mama too, and I really hear you on this. And what was coming to me is that art and that dance of mothering with good in. I know. With good, I feel like I want to sing. Good intentions and the trust that you spoke of, because setting it up, the planning. I agree with you because I think as mamas we manage a lot, right? We're managing us and then all our little ones, sometimes the spouse. So there's a lot of control going out. My twins just turned 16. I'm sharing this with you because I'm still standing, and I had the gift of being reminded that it's putting it, my journey has been, my journey, putting it out there, arranging, offering, and then releasing. And in that, making the choice to not fall into worry, but to instead embody trust and give the energy to my faith, right? To all that you spoke of, the intention, the knowing that at every turn, the wave is going to be exactly as it needs to be. So I practice that every day, and I go tumbling constantly, but it certainly helps to abort the worry. The laying it out, the writing of it, and the knowingness that we'll land where we need to land, I guess. I hope that's helpful in some way. Can't stop the worry, but can ride a little better, right?
I guess I try to look at it a little bit more logically. One of my biggest fears has been ending up a bag lady on Market Street. So financial security, especially as I get closer to retirement, has always been a big concern. So I break it down into you can't control the market, right? I break it down into goals, concrete steps that I can take. Things that I can do, like using certain index funds for my investments, steps that I can take, having more Roth investments, just logical things that I can do. And then after that, you just have to give it up. You can't control certain things. You just can't control them. So you take action on the things that you can control, and then you just acknowledge that there's things that you can't control. Or politics, God help us in 2024. But, you know, there are things that you can do. You can get involved in campaigns. You can contribute to certain campaign funds. You can write congresspeople. So there are certain actionable things that you can do. You can talk to people about issues. But, you know, you cannot control what other people do, how they vote, things like that. And, of course, the meditation and just learning that you can't control everything in life. So, you know, there are certain aspects you have to know what you can control and what you can't control. And I think giving up that control is important, and it's important to accept and realize.
The longer I practice, the more I realize the things that I can't control get bigger and bigger and bigger.
Yes.
I realize, well, what actually can I control? And even my intention is like, it's sort of an illusion of free will and control rather than actual control.
Thank you so much. I just had an observation that being older and practicing for a while, I worry much less, and it's wonderful. And what worry will do, it will just kind of cancel out any sense of adventure toward life.
Right.
So when I don't worry about a situation, I have a sense of adventure that replaces it. It's like, well, this is going to be interesting to see what happens, instead of worrying, which doesn't do anything except take the joy away for anything. You know, you're like clinging on to see what's going to happen, and then there's the next thing. And it's not even that thing that's so important to me. It's just the fact that, you know, I have a need to kind of be on the lookout all the time, you know, for any potential, you know, and I have to have them all lined up. But definitely for me, when I do have periods of time where I didn't worry, first of all, it's so relaxing, and then there's a sense of adventure instead of a sense of fear. So,
yes. I mean, life is this adventure that we don't really know what's going to happen. Even if we are very responsible and competent, we don't know what's going to happen. It could go all sorts of different directions. So just treat it like a big tudong.
Just had a quick question on worry, of course. So do you think, you know, it's kind of human nature to worry. So instead of not worrying, is it like blood pressure, you know, goes up, but then you calm down pretty quickly? So the idea is to really come to that baseline fairly quickly rather than say, don't worry.
Well, worry can be completely eradicated through wisdom. Yeah, you can say that worry is human nature, but you can also say that anger is human nature, or delusion is human nature, and all of that is true. Greed is human nature, but that doesn't mean we have to live by those principles or just be complacent about it. No, we can overcome those things. We can focus on the opposites. Selflessness and non-anger and wisdom. That's also human nature. So, yes, I mean, if we're humans and we sometimes worry, yeah, that by definition is human nature. But we can see, is this conducive to happiness or not? And if it's not conducive to happiness, we don't have to follow it. And then the habit will get weaker and weaker, and especially when we start to see some of the positive feedback, you know. Oh, when I don't worry, I'm actually more at ease. I can recognize the blessings in my life. I feel more content. All right? There's a lot of, you know, and then it becomes easier and easier to break that habit. Yeah. Oh, but certainly, whenever worry arises, if you can recognize it quickly, right, that's like, first strategy of mindfulness, clear awareness. As soon as it arises, catch it quickly. before your blood pressure gets too high. Take a few deep breaths, or maybe a quick reflection. Say, it's not really mine. It's not mine. It's out of my control, or it's whatever. And then kind of come back to being centered and balanced. The more quickly we can do that, the better.
I have one other question. So I was at an event with the Dalai Lama, and, you know, he was talking about this monk, Ani monk, women monk in Tibet that got burned and had a lot of, torture and stuff like that. And he just burst out crying. Mm. And then, so I was very surprised, you know, like he would cry at, you know, like show his emotions, but then he kind of calmed down. So how do you explain that? I know you're not, you can't represent Dalai Lama, but is that kind of normal, or he should have not cried?
Dalai Lamas can do whatever he wants. Well, no, I mean, there's nothing wrong with showing emotions, but it, you know, love is an emotion, loving kindness, compassion, these are all emotions too, right? And so we're just trying to emphasize the wholesome emotions that lead to happiness and peace, benefit for ourselves and benefit for everybody else. So, I mean, a situation like that, you know, Dalai Lama is a case where there's somebody who has potentially a lot to worry about, right? Representing his whole country, culture, threats against his life, his Sangha members being tortured. Yeah, it's very touching. So it's not surprising that it was very painful. Very painful to reflect on that.
I have a question. It's about the travel experience and, like, you know, going without money. And all. I think you said it's tadanga.
Huh?
The term for it?
Tudong.
Tudong, okay.
Yeah.
So do you think, like, you know, when you went for the travel, I'm assuming you were in Asia, and, like, do you think the amount of worry changes based on the society you are in? Because, like, you know, certain societies are more trusting, and if you the condition that you gave, like, it basically defines a homeless person. Like, in America, I feel like they have more struggle than if you are in Asia, right?
That's
like,
right.
You know, people are, I think, have that sense of, like, you know, I want to help my society more. This is my observation. Could be wrong. That's how I felt. So do you think levels of, you know, worry changes based on where you are? Or has it been true for you?
So what's the difference between the noble practice of Tudong and being homeless? Well, first of all, yes, I went Tudong sometimes in Asia, and that has certain benefits and drawbacks, but most of my Tudong was in New Zealand, right? Western country, non-Buddhist, and I would go to remote places where they had never seen a real Buddhist monk before. And it's like, people would think, they're not going to feed you. Why would they feed you? They don't have no idea even what you're doing. And say, yeah, well, I'll find out. And then we had to adjust it a little bit according to culture, but we're not allowed to ask for anything. So I would just stand silently in front of the grocery store.
Yeah.
I mean, it helps if you have a Buddhist robe, okay? A shaved head, monk's robe. It's like, okay, that's an archetype that people can tune into. And even if they've never seen a live Buddhist monk, they've probably seen it on TV somewhere. And it's like, okay, it's a spiritual person of some type. And often they would want to give me money. Right, and I was then I can say, oh, we're not allowed. Thank you very much, but we're not allowed to accept money. We can only accept offerings of food. And then more often than not, they would say, oh, okay, well, just wait. I'll get something inside. You know, they're going shopping anyway, so on the way out, you know, pop a sandwich or apple or something into my bowl. So that was a slight adjustment for culture, which we would not do in Thailand, for example. Thailand, if you're walking in the early morning with your bowl, people know what you're doing. But they wouldn't know that in New Zealand. So, but I think that's a good example of if you just listen to your fears, you wouldn't do it, right? You miss out on some of the best experiences if you just listen to your fears about the worries about what could go wrong. Oh, people won't recognize what you are. People might, you're not going to get food. You're going to go hungry. It will be terrible. People might harass you. Well, none of that happened, right? It was just like 99% positive experiences. I met people that would never, ever come to Buddhist meditation retreats or monasteries. We had some fantastic conversations and feel like I was really retouching people, you know? So it was very gratifying, and it was just wonderful in every way. But I think any society, you know, if you're going to really put yourself out there with the right intention, it's going to be a learning experience one way or another.
Someone posts online that you like relist the four strategies.
Well, the four strategies, just to repeat?
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. So the first is clear awareness, recognizing when worry is present. Second is active wisdom, using our reflection to understand the subject that we're worrying about. If we truly understand the nature of that subject, then the worry will dissipate. But it's difficult to have clear reflection if our mind's not at least somewhat calm, if it's very scattered, right? Because otherwise it's just like scratching the surface. So if our mind is calm, then our reflection has an opportunity to sink in more deeply and be more transformative. And the fourth one is making actual lifestyle changes, you know, practical changes in how we live that would be less conducive to worrying arising. Still? Yeah.
I have a really petty question. Why was the cousin trying to kill the Buddha?
Sangha politics. Office politics. His cousin was a talented meditator, but was unenlightened. And he got the idea that he should be the one to be the leader of the entire monastic sangha, and he had a certain following, which kind of bolstered his delusion around that, and so he thought if he just killed the Buddha, then he would be able to be the one to take his place and lead this whole community. So, be grateful for all your cousins who aren't trying to kill you. Okay. All right, maybe we can bring it to a conclusion then. All right. Thank you for inviting me. Nice to see you today.